Hi, my name is Selma, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. I'm real grateful to be here tonight. I come from the Navajo Nation. My clans are Totojitney. I was born from San Jacinto, and my maternal grandparents are Tachitney, and my paternal grandparents are Hanagahi. And I'm just real grateful to be here. I'm glad my brother Sam is sitting right there. I don't have to look at him directly, but he likes to tease us, so I'm glad his sitting there kind of keeps me honest. But I'm kind of nervous, and my hands are cold, and I just asked the Creator to help me to express myself, to share a little bit about my experience, strength, and hope. And in order to do this, I just want to sing a song to begin, just to kind of calm me down and to help me. I had to sing that because I was real nervous, and I felt like if I had to talk, I wanted to be okay. But like I said, my name is Selma, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. Oh, it's good to see my cheering squad there, Josie and Phyllis. And I want to thank the committee, especially Yvonne, for asking me to speak. It was a couple of weeks ago I heard from her. And she sent me an email and asked me, and I read it, and I kind of put it away for a while. I thought, well, let me think about this. And I know, you know, as they tell us in the program, that this program is not, you know, just for us to keep, that we have to give it away. Whatever we've experienced, we need to share that. And my daughter reminds me, see, where I work, I give a lot of training, and she always tells me, don't say, So she'll probably start counting my arms, so I have to be careful with this. And my brother Lewis is sitting here. I went to school with him, too, so he'll probably remember or start thinking about, you know, what we learned in school and how we should present ourselves and all that stuff. But anyway, excuse me, I've been struggling with this cold or whatever it is. But I grew up, you know, just like everybody else, I grew up on a reservation, the Navajo Nation, and my mom and dad my dad worked for the BIA, my mother worked for the Indian Health Service, and we were poor. We were real poor in those days. We lived in Fort Defiance, and that's what Al was referring to, because I get my mail in Window Rock, which is 7 miles away, but I live in Fort Defiance. And we always had hand-me-downs. We always had clothes that were used. The missionaries brought clothes, like from the east, and we always went to the mission to get our clothes, our shoes, and we never had new things. We always had used things. So early on, it was like I was never good enough. I always had to have all these things that other people had used, and we always felt like they came from the rich people in the east. And as I grew up, I went to a Catholic school, and that's where Lewis and I went to school, and some fellas and some of the other people, we went to school there. So I had a real strict upbringing in the Catholic school. It was either you do this or you're going to go to hell kind of thing. So to me, the God that I knew then was a real punishing God, and no matter what I did, it was never enough, it was never right. And as I grew up, I started seeing alcohol abuse in my family. I started seeing my dad using alcohol. I saw my grandmother, my grandfather, my uncles use alcohol. And they were beautiful, loving people when they didn't use. But once they started drinking, once we had the picnics, it was like everything just went different. Everybody, my aunts, my mother's sisters, my mother, everybody just really were afraid and everything was just always hush-hush. We never talked about it. We never expressed ourselves about who got beat up or who started it or who drank the most or who brought the booze or anything like that. It was always, as soon as things started happening, we were always rushed to the vehicles and away we went home. But I remember my dad driving away, and he'd be just cussing and swearing and yelling. He'd been in the Army too. And he'd be just cussing and swearing about so-and-so didn't do this and so-and-so didn't do that. And it just continued like that. So when I got to high school, that's when I started using. And I saw myself using because, like any of us that went to the Catholic schools, we always liked to defy the nuns and the fathers. We'd start smoking, and eventually that would lead us to using alcohol. So when I was like in the 10th grade, I had to leave the Catholic school because I was going to get expelled, and I don't want to embarrass my parents. So I went to a public school, and that's where I started using alcohol more. That's where I found out that it helped me. I had crooked teeth, and there was all these things wrong with me. I was never, like I said, I was never good enough. So to me, that helped me to overcome all those feelings of insecurity, of not feeling good about myself, the low self-confidence and all that. And I started seeing a guy, my children's father, and he was a cowboy. And in those days, you know, those were the men that ruled. And I started seeing him, I started going out with him, and he graduated, and I finished school, and he went off to California somewhere, went to school, eventually went to the Army, but still, you know, that alcohol was there. It was always fun, the weekends came along fast, and we partied, and when we got married, I had a little girl, and eventually another one, four children, all, you know, the four children that I have. And the boozing got worse. Well, we got married before that. And we made several geographics because of his drinking, thinking that if we moved somewhere else, that things would be better, that we could maybe start anew, that a new job, new place, new people, and all this would help us. So we did these kind of geographics, but we always came home. And I drank with him. We partied together. But things always started off fun. But in the end, I always got beat up. I always was accused of looking at that guy or smiling at that guy or doing something with that guy. So eventually, I because of my job especially, I couldn't keep going to work. I worked for the government. I couldn't keep going to work with black eyes and ending up in a hospital where I worked with the people that I worked with taking care of me. So eventually I did slow down. But his drinking got worse. He kept going. And eventually I said, you know, this is it. I can't continue to live like this. And so I had to ask him to leave. And that was real difficult because when you have children, you always think, you know, the father's got to be there. We've got to make it work. But it came to a point where when he was drinking, he started beating on my older daughter. And that was real painful because instead of beating up on me, I wasn't drinking with him anymore. So he started beating up on my daughter. And one time I came home from a conference. Well, I was at a conference and I found out that he had beat her up and the other children had witnessed it. And so this is when I told him that he had to leave because it was like he was doing, you know, doing those things to me, that he was doing it to her what he had done to me. And after that, I thought, you know, life was going to get better because the real alcoholic was out of my life. And lo and behold, I started drinking. And all this time I'd been in Al-Anon, and I thought, you know, I was okay. I thought, no, you know, that's not me. I can drink. But I found out that I started using because, again, you know, the loneliness, the being alone, the being by myself, going through all these difficulties of raising my children by myself, I started looking for, what do they say, greener pastures. And it was real funny because I had this counselor, and this counselor told me that I should go out, go meet people, and guess what that meant in my mind, that I had to go to the bars and look for these men and look for these people that I could have fun with. And the same as before, alcohol did those strange things to me. It made me forget about, you know, who I was, the difficulties I was having. I could dance all night with the alcohol, and I could just go on. And, you know, by the grace of God, I never lost my job. I never got a DUI, and I didn't end up in jail. But I could have. I remember driving home from Gallup, New Mexico, when we just had a two-lane highway, driving with, you know, one eye open, trying to see where the center lane was. And I remember, you know, my children just kind of looking at me and wondering, you know, what's going on with Mom. And I think the most difficult part, probably the part that was the most difficult part in my life, was when I came home drunk with a man. And I never in my wildest dream or never in my life ever thought I would do such a thing. But we came home drunk, and he was hanging on to me, and I was barely getting to the house. And we walked in, and my four children were all standing there. And they looked at me, and they were so, I could just see the anger in their eyes and the disappointment in their faces. And I tried to talk to them, but my daughter slapped me, and everything just fell apart. They took off, and we lived way out in the countryside, just like Al said, is your road still, is it paved yet? We live about 7 miles off the main highway, and they went out into the darkness, and I couldn't find them. I kept calling out for them, and they left me there with this man. And it was the most ugliest feeling I've ever felt, to be treated like that by my own children. And this was all because of alcohol that I thought was my God at that time. And finding out afterwards that my children had gone to my dad's house, and I took off, and I just felt so awful. I just felt so, I was so devastated with myself for reaching that point, for allowing myself to use the alcohol. I mean, I had gotten rid of my husband because of the alcohol, and yet I was doing the same thing, probably going to the worst extremes. And I took off with him, and I went back to his place, and while going, you know, all these crazy things were playing in my mind. You know, why don't I just drive off the cliff? Why don't I just, you know, you think all these crazy things just to not think about the consequences of the drinking. And it was a couple days, and my sister finally called, got a hold of me, and said, you know, you need to come home. Your children are missing you. Your dad is about to have a heart attack. And it was real painful to go back. And my daughter was about 3-4 years old then, my youngest daughter. And they wouldn't come to me. They wouldn't go with me. It was, I knew it was going to be difficult, but just seeing that, you know, they didn't want to go with me because of what I had become. And going home, and slowly they came back, but it, you know, just facing them and looking at them was really difficult. And I had to say, you know, I'm sorry, this isn't going to happen again. But guess what? It happened again. And all because of the alcohol, all because I wanted to, again, feel good. I wanted to have a good time. I wanted to, you know, just go out and forget about everything else. And so all this time I was still kind of bouncing in and out of Al-Anon. And finally I came to a meeting. We used to have a real active AA and Al-Anon program at Fort Defiance at the Day of the Time Club. And I finally came in from the Al-Anon room into the AA room. And one of my brothers, right now, he's deceased, but I always thank him, because I never thought I'd walk into the AA room and say, I'm an alcoholic. And even saying that was so difficult, because, me, an alcoholic? Never. And it was one of my brother Bert, that used to say, Atlani Nishle. And that's the only way that it hit me, that I am an alcoholic. And this brother that was sitting here, his name was Boats, he just told me, he says, "Welcome, sister, it's about time." And it's like, how does he know I'm an alcoholic? How does he know that I needed to be here? But he just laughed and he just said, "Welcome." And he told me that, just to sit down and listen. And that's how I came into AA. And I kept going to meetings. I was going to both programs at the time. And there was people like him, other women in the program, that started talking to me about, getting down to business and working the steps. And I knew the steps in the Al-Anon program, but I didn't really... I knew what I was doing with Al-Anon, but with looking at my own alcoholism, the steps were kind of like, we say them at every meeting, but what does it mean? So working those steps with my sponsor was a real challenge. And even today, I have to remember the steps, and I always say, the first three steps are like, giving up no matter what it is, even if it's whatever kinds of difficulties I might be facing. And then the next three, owning up to my inadequacies or my deficiencies, and then making amends, and then keeping up. So that's how I look at the steps, and that's how I try to work them. And the slogans have been so beautiful, to let go. I mean, for anything anymore, that's what works, the serenity prayer. But in AA, that's where I found my higher power. Like I said, I went to the Catholic school, so I always thought that that God was standing there like this, and here's your mortal sin, and here's your venial sin, and you're going to get all these mortal sins, and you're going to be damned to hell, and all this other stuff. So that's how I always thought about God. That's how I always thought about the punishing God that I grew up to understand and to know. But once I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was a real spiritual experience learning about my higher power. And understanding that my higher power accepts me for who I am no matter what, no matter how ugly I've been, no matter what kind of a woman I am, that I can always make amends, and that I can always come back to my higher power and ask for forgiveness and go on. And it was in the sweat lodge where we were having an Indians in Sobriety camp out at Margaret's house. My last drink was December 11th, 1990. It should have been before that, because it was like June of 1990, and we were having a party somewhere for one of our coworkers, and he put a wine cooler in front of me. And without any hesitation, I downed it. And again, just reminding me how powerful, how cunning, how baffling that alcohol is. So anyway, I count December 11th as my last drink. But it was in that sweat lodge that I found out about my higher power. I found out that my higher power, whom I call the Creator today, is a loving, a loving God. That with all my difficulties that I have as a single mother, as a single parent, that it is possible to go on. It is possible to go on without alcohol. It is possible, no matter what, that the challenges have been there. My son, my daughter Samantha is she has about 16 years of sobriety. Right now she struggles with a disease called lupus. But again, using the steps, using the program, that has helped me to know that the Creator will take care of her, and I just leave her again in the Creator's hands whenever whenever she has any kind of relapses or whenever she has any kinds of problems. But she too now struggles, you know, with her own children. Have a son, Trav, and he's real funny because we both went to treatment together. And he uses it on me, and even though he continues to use alcohol and drugs, it's funny, he throws things back at me. And I have to step back and think, what in the hell is he trying to tell me? And then my younger son, Josh, has been another challenge. My perfect son has been in the military. And I would say the military ruined him because he is so cocky, he loves to drink, and he ended up in jail for about a month and for domestic violence, and that was real painful. And again, you know, trying to show him, trying to tell him that it's all because of alcohol. It's like, you know, son, you've seen what your dad has done. You've seen me in my struggles with alcohol. You've seen your uncles, you've seen relatives, you've seen your brother in his disease of alcoholism. And he's been sober a couple months now, and he says he's trying to stay sober, and that makes me happy. And just seeing all these young people here today, you know, gives me that sense of hope. And then my youngest daughter, Nicole, who's with me, she's always with me, no matter what, and I'm just really grateful for her. She went into the armed services again. I say it was just to get away from all the craziness in our family. But to her, you know, she wanted to do something for herself, and she had a medical discharge, so she's home with me now. Again, you know, I have to let go of her, and I have to ask the Creator again to take care of her and let her experience her own trials and tribulations, and also to, and I just pray to God that she never picks up that drink. But, you know, I have no control over that. I can't stand behind her or walk behind her or be there to make sure she doesn't take that drink. They know what alcohol has done to their family. So today, it's like there's no way, absolutely no way, will I ever go back to drinking and using and doing all those crazy things. I'm not perfect, but at least now I can acknowledge whenever something I do, something I say, you know, it makes me more aware of my surroundings, more aware of myself. I have I know myself better. I understand myself. I can look at myself and look at my own deficits and acknowledge them and ask the Creator to help me with that. And today, I still go to meetings. I work with a lot of women, and I'm there to help them whenever they need help, because I know that when I was struggling as a woman, I couldn't find anybody to talk to. I couldn't find anybody that was having the same problems that I was having. It was probably just me. But I know how difficult it was, you know, to reach out and to ask for help, to reach out and to ask somebody to, you know, listen to me, give me some advice. You know, most of the times we just listen, and that's good to know that there's somebody there. So I help a lot of women in our community. The people that I work with, they always come to me, and that makes me feel good. And then trying to practice spirituality, trying to have that connection, that relationship with the Creator that I never had. You know, when we come into the program, they always tell us, you know, to read the big book, and that was really difficult for me. I mean, I like to read, but it's like I was reading that paragraph over and over and over. And I finally decided, well, you know, I'm never going to get anywhere. So And I thought, well, I'm gonna make a schedule, and I'm gonna read, you know, this paragraph, this for these 2-3 days, and then I'm gonna go on. So I did finally finish, and guess what? They came out with a new edition. And so now, with the new edition, I was real fortunate that I obtained the new edition, and so far, you know, the stories are pretty similar, but I think, you know, no matter what I read now, I try to think about it and to link it with whatever I'm going through, and there's always a connection. And when I go anywhere, like to meetings, when I go, especially to speaker meetings, I love to listen. And today, just listening to the other speakers, I mean, you know, I could identify with each and every one of them, especially with Artsy, you know, the being alone and almost isolated. You know, I like to do that sometimes. I live in the mountains, and right now I take care of my dad, who's 90 years old. And so I stay downtown Fort Defiance with him, and I miss my home up in the mountains. But I always tell, I have to remind myself, and I always tell the Creator, you know, one of these days I'm going to go home, and I'll be able to just sit there in the mountains and pray and meditate and do what I want to do. But right now I take care of my dad, and that's a real challenge, because when he was drinking, he was a real ugly, mean man. And today, when he gets... I think he's getting kind of demented, and sometimes he gets mad at me, and he'll start cussing me and saying things, and I think, God, that's the way he was when he was drinking. That's the way he was when he had that alcohol in his system. And it's kind of scary, because he's a little old man, but he can still, his words are real painful. And so I have to have a lot of patience with him, and I just, again, you know, I use the steps and ask the Creator to help me to take care of him. But there's a lot of activities in my life today. I still work with the government. And every day I think I'm going to retire, but I haven't done that. And I think, what am I going to do after retirement? Everybody, like Wilbur, tells me that there's life after retirement. You can always get involved in the National Indian AA conventions and those kinds of things. And I said, fine, you know, but I haven't done it. But I still have to be active with especially the people in AA. I have to go to meetings. I have to listen and to be available to other people and to reach out. I know, again, you know, how difficult it was when I was just coming into the program, that I didn't have that. And like I said, maybe it was just me. You know, I wasn't reaching out. And I was really afraid to share. I was really afraid to talk. And I remember the first time I talked, huh, Rusty? Where is he? I think it was for 3 minutes. And today I think I do a little better, because I guess maybe that comes with age, where you can just kind of keep talking and going on and on. But just seeing the young people today, I mean, you know, that just makes me feel so good, because we have so many young people that are out there struggling, so many young people that don't know where to go or know who to turn to. And I still consider myself a young person, because I still feel like I have a lot to learn. And that's why I hang around, you know, with you people, and I especially enjoy listening to the old timers, Lyle and, you know, some of those people, because they have a lot to offer. They have a lot of words of wisdom. And I know that, you know, we don't know what's in store for us in the future. But to me, the Creator, wherever I am, you know, I talk to the Creator, and I just ask the Creator every day to keep me sober today. And I ask the Creator to help me in whatever He has in store for me for that day, for today, for tonight, whatever. And to me, the Creator is real special to me today. Whatever I do, it's always with the Creator. Whether I'm riding down the road, on the freeway, up the mountains, going to work, whatever, it's always in prayer. And just seeing, a couple of weeks ago, we went to Texas to bring some of my daughter's things back from Fort Hood. And I was always telling them about the blue bonnets along the road. And they kept saying, where's the blue bonnet? And when we finally saw them, we said, oh, you know, But to me, since I went to school in Texas, you know, I remember all those blue bonnets all over the road around San Antonio. But up in western Texas, they're not that abundant. So, you know, flowers are real special today. And it's like, you know, each and every one of us are like a flower. As we grow, you know, there's a little bud and eventually it blossoms. Just like these roses out here, those are beautiful. So, it's not, coming into AA isn't the end. There's always something new going on. There's always new people to meet. I've been real fortunate that I've been involved in some of the activities like Indians in Sobriety. I was the voice of the convention here a couple years ago. And just, you know, doing those kinds of activities, going to the different conventions throughout the country, especially in Indian country, and listening to other people. You know, I've met so many beautiful people, so many loving people, so many accepting people that don't judge me, that don't say, oh, that's just another Galani. That's just another drunk. And especially for our women, you know, it's so much more difficult, I say, especially as a Native American woman, alcoholic, as a Native American drunk, as a Native American woman drunk. It seems like, you know, we're supposed to be the main person in the family for our children. And if we fall down, then, you know, it's hard to get back up. And it seems like, you know, people just want to keep stomping on us and they just want to go like us and make, you know, push us down into the ground. So for Native American women, I feel like, you know, it's really more difficult for us to share, for us to talk about our intimate feelings, our close feelings, and I'm just real grateful for the program. I'm grateful for how it works. I'm grateful for the people that I have met through the program. And today I'm alone with my children, but that's okay. I figure that if the Creator wanted to put somebody in my life today, that the Creator would do so. But life goes on, and all I have to do is take care of myself. Remember that that this program is here for me all the time. It doesn't die. It's always here, no matter what. That no matter what kind of difficulties I have in front of me, that I don't need to, even though I'm alone, me by myself, that I don't need to walk alone, that the Creator is always there for me. So again, you know, I thank the committee. I thank Yvonne for asking me to talk. And I just want to say that I hope, you know, sharing a little bit about my experience, my strength, and my hope that I've touched some of you, most of you, in a little way. And as, you know, when I go to places, when I go to meetings, I like to always think I'm going to learn something today. And that's how I always think about it. You know, I'm not saying, oh, he's so boring or anything like that. I always make myself listen and I make myself learn. So, you know, again, I just want to say thank you, and, you know, you're all special to me, each and every one of you. And I love each and every one of you. Oh, thank you.